I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 2nd of October. Rising from Ashes is a multi-layered, inspirational documentary that's showing at the Milwaukee Film Festival. It's the story of the first Rwandan national cycling team and their six-year journey to compete in the Olympic Games in London. The Rwandan cyclists have experienced unimaginable horrors, losing so many family members to genocide. They are coached by cycling legend Jock Boyer, and the film is produced and narrated by Forrest Whitaker. It's just a remarkable film. It's inspirational. It gives you a little bit of an understanding of the genocide. Beautiful, beautiful photography of the Rwandan hills, the beauty of that countryside, and the inspirational stories of these young men, and also all of the families, all of the lives they touch in small villages throughout the whole country. So we're delighted this hour to be talking with the director, producer, and editor, and also with Jock Boyer, one of America's most fabled cyclists who spent so much time grooming these young people and coaching them. And we'll be welcoming phone calls. I don't know how many of you had a chance to see the film. It was at the Milwaukee Film Festival yesterday, but you will have other chances to see it. There are so many films. This just happens to be one that caught our attention, and we thought it would be a very interesting show. Joining us is T.C. Johnstone. He is director, producer, and editor of the film Rising from Ashes. He started making films over 10 years ago. He's worked as a director on many projects, including national television, ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, Discovery, two independent films, and he is now focusing on independent documentary feature films. T.C., thank you very much for joining us.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, our pleasure. And Jock Boyer is also with us, one of America's most fabled cyclists, grew up battling Tom Ritchie in Northern California's competitive cycling leagues. And they developed a friendship. At the age of 17, he left the U.S. to compete professionally against the world's elite in France. And in 1983, he made history as the first American to ever ride in the Tour de France. When he came back to the United States, he would lose it all. He found himself in jail for inappropriate behavior with a female minor. So he's in a pretty dark period of his life, and he reconnected with his long-lost friend on an unlikely proposition to become the coach of Rwanda's first national cycling team. And so he spends a long period of time developing these cyclists and becoming pretty much a part of the whole culture and has a fairly deep understanding of what's going on there as the years go by. Jock, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for the invitation.
Yeah,
it's good to be here.
Yeah, it's good to have you here. I really thought the film was just so inspirational and really so beautiful, TC. I'm wondering, at one point you decided that you were going to do a film about this because you had to cover it for a long period of time.
Yeah, the film took us just under 7 years to complete, and mm-hmm. it started out, we went to Rwanda, and a good friend of Jock and I, is a guy named Dan Cooper, was in a hotel lobby and said, I've got a great idea for a film. And I said, you and everybody else. And at the end of it, he really did. And in the month after that, we basically went over and spent a month, and Tom Ritchie, a famed cyclist in the U.S. and known around the world for his accomplishments, said, these guys have the talent, but it's going to take a very special person with the right gifts to be able to develop this, to give these guys a handout, not a handout. And mm-hmm. his name's Jock Boyer. And the story kind of began after that.
And what a thing for you to do, Jock. I mean, Tom approached you and said, hey, I think you ought to go to Rwanda and develop a national cycling team. What was the proposition to you?
Actually, the proposition was come over and help me first organize a bike race, which we did in 2006. And then after that was go over and test some riders. So initially, it was an 11-day trip. But then after that, it was a three-month trip. I expected to be over there for about 3 months, and now it's been over 7 years.
Isn't that something? Tell me about, Jock, why don't we give this to you first? There really is kind of a cycling tradition, and in some ways cycling has helped, I understand, some of these people be able to escape genocide, that get on your bikes and get out of where all this horror was taking place. Tell me about the cycling tradition in Rwanda.
Cycling in Rwanda is huge, and it's 99% transporting goods, whether that be, you know, grains or charcoal or water or even people as taxi bikes. There are probably more bikes in Rwanda than almost any other Africa, or certainly any other African country I've ever seen, but none of it is recreational. So they did have a very small group of maybe 20, 30 riders that did some races and some recreational riding or race riding, but on bikes that were 25, 30 years old.
And in putting together this film, TC, you had so many levels, didn't you? You had these young athletes who are being developed as athletes, but the backdrop is the horrors that they have all lived through and the country has lived through as well. This was just horrendous what happened in Rwanda.
Yeah, I mean, the big surprise for me is the first time I went to Rwanda is I had a lot of misconceptions about the country. And in the media, there was, for 10 years, people really thought that the genocide happened in 1994. I first arrived there on the ground in 2005. And I realized that it was very clean, and people were smiling, and they were optimistic, and they were hardworking, and that they were really looking for a future. And I think that was the first thing that kind of took me by surprise, that they were really looking for a second chance. And it was a country that wanted to get back on its feet, and it wasn't looking to it in some ways had been handicapped by handouts, is that people were trying to fix it instead of helping them kind of redevelop themselves. Mm. And that's what was unique about this story, mm-hmm. is, you know, obviously in the film, we want to clarify kind of the past, but it was really, instead of looking back, let's look forward to a country that was really rising from the ashes. And that all of a sudden became this very exciting idea. And as Jock continued to work with these writers and not just seeing these writers all of a sudden believe something that they could become. Mm-hmm. And with the right assistance and right coaching, to see them to rise to the occasion, that's really where what we found is the film, it sits with people, is that there's a lot of misconceptions about second chances and hope. And what we found in the 7 years was this story that's so much bigger than cycling. And I would probably, sometimes people say it's a cycling film, but I would hope that for most people that see it, they say that's not really what that's
about.
Oh,
it's more than that. And I think, Jock, it would be fair to say that you thought it was going to be about cycling initially, but of course, when you found out the stories of the people you were working with, it became for you more than a cycling story as well, right?
Absolutely. When I went there and when things started happening, you know, I didn't really know what we were, you know, doing. I was just, you know, determining if there was talent and training them and seeing that. And it didn't happen until, you know, going to different races in different African countries, I realized that it's way more than just a bike team. This team is bringing hope to so many other countries, just in as example. Because even within Africa, so many countries think Rwanda is still, you know, at war with each other. And it, you know, gave a whole different image of Rwanda just because of their bike team.
Right. And when you got there, both of you, what was amazing was to look at what equipment these people had. They were riding bikes, and it may have helped them with their lives, being able to keep their lives. But these bikes were kind of broken. Some didn't have brakes on them. The chains kept breaking. They were working with really bad equipment, weren't they, Jock?
Yeah, the equipment was remarkably bad. And in the beginning, we weren't equipped to, you know, either get them bikes or parts or anything. And slowly, as we got, you know, more donations and more support from, you know, the bike industry, we were able to change that. But in the beginning, it was like, man, how did these guys even train? They're more than half the time on the ride fixing something and not riding.
And TC, do you want to comment on that as well? As you must have been astounded as a filmmaker thinking that when you first saw what it was, that how's anything going to ever happen from this? They have virtually nothing.
When we started this film in 2005, it was kind of to be really honest, it was kind of a joke. I mean, their hearts were in the right place, but it was such an impossible idea, and they didn't have any equipment, they didn't have any training, they would take old soccer shoes and cut off the cleats so that they look like cycling shoes.
Oh.
They really wanted the essence of being known as a cyclist, and they would take, you know, old anything that they could adapt to make it look like they were a cyclist, they would do it. But what was really interesting is that they just never had any formal training, and so they didn't even know how to drink water throughout the ride. So it was so far backwards, and they didn't have any money. It was raw passion meets impossible vision. And that's really how I could describe the film, is that it looked like a good idea in the beginning, but where we ended up 7 years later, I'm still speechless.
Oh, I'll bet you are. You didn't know what the outcome was going to be. And look at what the outcome was.
Yeah, well, what's happened now with the film is that it's given people a chance to see their own lives differently. And what we found is that so many people are living in unresolved conflict of their own and unforgiveness with whether it's a broken marriage or a bankruptcy or, loss of a child. We could go down the list of people that we've talked to that have just said, I just didn't know if I could keep going.
Mm-hmm.
And I needed this to remember that there's hope and I can do it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we tell audiences all the time that, you know, sometimes the biggest person we need to give a second chance to is ourselves, is that we live in a sense of resentment and unforgiveness of just maybe past mistakes. And this film, we hope, really gives people a chance to see themselves in a different light, that we all deserve a second chance. And it's amazing the power of forgiveness,
right,
and peace, reconciliation.
Right. And you may, at this point, there will be some people who are not really familiar with the Rwandan genocide, and it's hard to understand with the shift of power, et cetera. It's hard to understand how this can happen on Earth as well. But you may want to give us an idea of what some of these cyclists were dealing with. They had, many of them had up to 60 members of their families killed in this genocide.
Every one of the riders in Team Rwanda, and the interesting thing for me as a filmmaker is that you meet people, and it's often that time in documentary film where you meet characters and you meet people, but as you get to know them, it gets more and more complex. And as we really were walking with Jock, there was a lot we didn't even know that Jock was experiencing, just because he, for 7 years, was just so committed to the cause of understanding how to steward what, you know, God had given him and his sense of God-given talent and in cycling, and it just really wasn't going to let the past affect the future. But these guys, most of them have seen mass murder at a scale that the world will never know, and for them to recover from that and for them to have a vision for their lives was really just was great leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as Jock was walking alongside of them, it really became just as much about being a coach to them as it was being more.
Mm-hmm.
And without giving away the film, it was really an amazing thing to see, that, you know, when you walk alongside of someone through difficult times, that sometimes you never know what's going to happen when you jump in.
Yeah. And Jock, did you initially, were you skeptical of all that you saw, or did you, right when you got there, see a great potential in some of these young men?
I did see a potential, but I also saw how daunting it was, what they were up against, and I just took it month by month. You know, we always had enough funds to last us another 3 months, and I just said to myself, okay, I can do it for another 3 months. And it just kept going on and on, and you know, it wasn't until 3-4 years down the road that we got a little more funding, so, you know, we could look a little bit farther ahead. But it was daunting, and seeing how much it was changing their lives already, even without being on the international scene, was sufficient for me to say, okay, I'm going to keep with them.
And I know they were worried at one point that you were going to leave them, but you didn't. You stayed for a long period of time. That meant all the world to many of these young men, didn't it?
It did. It was kind of, you know, there's so often, you know, nonprofits come in and just leave. So they were used to people coming in, making things look great, and then just leaving, and whatever project it was would just kind of like disappear. So that was their norm they were used to. So the fear of that definitely was in their minds, you know, even just to be able to get, you know, bike parts once they had not off had we just packed up and left.
You were able to get these people to work and to train and to finally learn how to drink water and eat food, et cetera. To do a sport, could you tell us, because I don't know very much about bicycle racing, but this looks like it was really, really strenuous work, that this is hard, isn't it?
Very difficult. Yeah, it's incredibly difficult.
Tell me what it takes from the body, how often you have to eat, how many hours a day you have to train.
We do every week, or probably 30 weeks a year from Monday to Friday. We do training camps, and the rides range from 2.5 to 5.5 hours. They are going on specific training regimens right now. It's pretty intensive. We do team time trials. We do individual time trials. We do, in Rwanda, it's either up or down, so it's very rigorous terrain. The roads are actually pretty good, so we don't have that as an issue. And they get 3 very good meals a day. We have a whole crew, including my wife, that is just behind them all the time, and you know, making sure they're getting proper food. We've got, you know, several mechanics on the ground. We train also the Rwandans. We are in the process of training them to take over for us so that when we do leave eventually that, you know, we'll have a whole crew and team that are used to the way we're working set up and be able to continue.
And do you find that there's great deep interest among young people in Rwanda? I would imagine due to the success of the program that a lot of people want to be cyclists now, do they?
Absolutely. It's actually become a culture now even more so than before. We have a national tour that is one of the top cycling events in Africa. It's called the Tour of Rwanda. It showcases Rwanda over 8 days. We have even a U.S. team that comes every year, the Sanofit team, and we've got European teams and obviously all the top African teams that participate, including our star Adrian Nyonshuti's MTN Quebeca team, which also has a really good message, you know, about getting bikes to rural areas for kids going to school.
The other lovely part of the film, TC, is that you not only concentrate on these bikers, each of whom, even if you just centered on one, would have an incredible story to tell, but you also bring in the communities. So in Rwanda, it's not just your individual success. When you look at people gathering to see the ultimate success of some of the bikers, or when you look at the fact that the bikers, when they finally get a little bit of money, that it's not just for them, that it's shared by people in the community. And in some ways it creates problems because somebody's got money and other people don't have money. But you take in the whole culture in the film as well.
Yeah, you know, I was just putting on, what I found I was putting on the screen is what I was learning. And one of the hardest things that to do in a film like this is to emotionally separate yourself from the cast, because you've become good friends and over time you've gotten to know each other. But the one thing that I wanted to do was to tell the story honestly, and that's difficult. And I felt like that was probably the thing that I'm most proud of, and that so far I'm most proud of the fact that at the end of the day, that what's on the screen is really what I saw, and not fabricated to make something perfect. And I think along the way, what was very interesting is that you would see this. The whole idea was to build a cycling team, but what was happening was they were helping people get back on their feet. And to do that, you had to, what I saw Jock doing was not just taking care of them, but getting to know their families and seeing what their families needed, and teach them, it was problem solution all along the way that I thought was fascinating. Is it, if it was my mom sick, it was okay. How do we, that would mean that they couldn't come train. So they had to think differently. It was a constant problem solving of how to think differently about yourself and about circumstances and about what you believed in. And that was always fascinating to me, that, for so long it wasn't being prescriptive, but it was being descriptive. Is we want to go forward and become pro cyclists, but how do we get there? It was really an adventure of the unknown. And that's what made the film, has made the film fun, I think, on our end, is that as you look back and you watch something that we couldn't have dreamt the story up if we tried.
Right. Yeah.
And that's not the easiest on a career, but it turned out okay.
I thought about that when I was watching it. I thought, they didn't know what was going to happen here. It's just, that's one of the things that makes it so remarkable, that you stayed with it, right? You stayed with it as well as a filmmaker.
Well, I have to really give the credit to, I'm one guy on a really large team. I'm most proud that I've surrounded myself with people that are much greater than myself. And whether that's our producer, Greg Quidar, or, our board and our executive producers and people. And at the same time, one of the things that is not known about the film is it's completely donor funded, and we don't have any debt on the film. And there has been people that have believed in this film for 7 years that it would be the right story. And simultaneously, that the team is completely donor funded. So individuals that, decide to buy a ticket to the film tonight and in some subtle way, they're supporting something greater than themselves. And we're really thankful for that. And, we've seen with the film that people watch it, and at the end of the day, they go, we want to get involved. How can we get involved? And we just always tell them, you can go to the Team Rwanda, .com website, or the Rising from Ashes, the movie website, and find out a little bit more of what we're doing, because the film is just the starting point of where we're headed.
And Jock, why did you stay with it all these years?
I think it had to do with a couple of the writers, especially Adrian, knowing that me being there would enable him to have a life that he never would have been able to have. And just to make sure that I didn't want to leave something that would fall apart if I left. And that's one of our main goal, is making sure that things will continue as we pull back, and that, they have the support from us as, we keep going. We have also opened centers we're continuing our whole thing in Rwanda, but we've also opened centers in Ethiopia and Eritrea.
Oh.
And that is another whole conflict resolution that we are looking at to target, along with Rwanda, because Rwanda plays an important part in all of that. And, I, like TC, we have a whole army of people behind us that really support us. I work hand in hand with my wife, Kimberly, and the mechanics that come on board, the extra coaches that come on board, and we have, just a whole mass of people that can't come to Rwanda but do support us either in advice or in money or in whatever, parts they can send over or anything. And it's been really good. And the website is teamrwandacycling.org.
Team Rwanda Cycling.
Cycling.org.
.org. Okay, great.
But anyway, it's been, you know, it's, if somebody said you're going to go to Rwanda and spend 7 years,
right.
I would have said no thanks.
I know. You said, so what? What? Oh,
yeah.
Life, isn't it something? We welcome phone calls. I don't know if this is the kind of conversation you can call. Maybe somebody saw the film, which would be terrific. We hope that many more of you will. It's going to be this Friday at the Oriental at noon and also Wednesday, October 9 at Fox Bay, and that's at 10:15 in the evening. For more information about all of the films, you can go to MKEfilm.org. This one caught our attention, and we thought that you may want to hear more about it just because of the nature of this story. It's a remarkable story. It's Jock, who's one of our guests this hour, Jock Boyer, who goes to Rwanda, and Jock is a really big-time cyclist. He was the first to compete professionally, U.S. Professional, against the world's elite in France. In 1983, he made history as the first American to ever ride in the Tour de France. So he goes to Rwanda, and he works with a group of young men who have been through the horrendous genocide, lost so many family members. There's a cycling tradition in Rwanda, but mostly as a way to get around or to escape a genocide, for that matter. And so the filmmakers went to Rwanda and spent really 7 years. It's amazing what happens at the end of this film. They didn't know exactly what was going to happen, but it's a true story of hope and overcoming enormous, enormous loss, and it's really inspirational. T.C. Johnstone is also with us, director, producer, and editor of the film Rising from Ashes. Here's our phone number. We may have some of you listening who are familiar with Rwanda or familiar with cycling. Feel free to give us a call. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. And our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We talk about the film documentary Rising from Ashes this hour of the program. 800-486-8655 is the number. Harry in Madison is our first caller for you, gentlemen. Hi, Harry.
Hello.
Hi.
Really enjoying the program today, particularly about, you know, spreading the bicycles and that is an old, you know, a transportation. I feel it's much better than trying to distribute automobiles or motorcycles or other things. It's the kind of transportation we probably all need to be looking at more. And one thing that I was a Peace Corps volunteer in the early 2002 to 2004, and I remember hearing about some projects where they were NGOs collecting used bicycles, putting them in containers along with parts and tools, and then these would land in Central America and Africa and other developing countries. And it was sort of a ready-made transportation source with a micro enterprise with the parts and tools to repair the bikes, which inevitably, if people ride bikes for very long, they're going to need repaired. And I just thought this is the kind of thing that could really boost a developing country, the communities and such. And I just applaud the fellows and their work in Rwanda.
Thank you so much, Harry, for the call. Is any of that kind of project going to Rwanda, Jock?
I have heard of some of those. Mostly I've heard of some going to Namibia and also West Africa. We in Africa have not in Rwanda. Have not received any of those, but I know it's a successful groups that do that, and it definitely does impact the community.
Thank you, Harry, for your call. Dick in Bark River, Michigan. Hi.
Hello, thank you. Waiting. I'm for 15 years I've been saddened knowing about Rwanda, and also I've like to shop at the scrapyard in a small town in the Upper Peninsula for antique tools, and always there were dozens, thousands of bicycles crushed, which needed minor repair only. Mm-hmm. But the last thing is a wonderful movie, 2004, Don Cheadle, Hotel Rwanda. Excellent. Thank you.
Yes, thank you for the call. That was a great film. TC, you want to respond first, and then Jock?
We might have lost TC. I don't know.
Oh, there we are. There we are.
Oh, there we are.
Okay. Hi, TC.
Yeah. I mean, the bike is, you know, where we're headed now is very interesting. You know, the film has really opened up a door for a larger discussion. Is that the bike is a great freedom tool, and that's kind of what I've seen out of this process. Simultaneously, it's something that is that Tom Ritchie said early. He said, "I've never seen anybody ride a bike and not smile." And that I've seen a lot of smiles over the last 7 years. It's at the same time, something that a lot of people don't know about Jock is he's got this very he's got an exceptional ability to handle pain. and that over the years, that's, you know, when I first met Jock, I'd actually run into him. We had met each other a couple of years before we actually filmed the movie, and he was working. He had was the oldest and the youngest rider to win a race that is touted harder than climbing Everest, where you start from San Diego and end in Atlantic City, and it's the first one to get there. There's no stages, there's no anything.
Wow.
And to win it at both of those different categories was phenomenal. And however, during the making of the film, it was very, Jock continued to remind me that maybe my diet exercise regimen was not up to par. So I've had a subtle transformation of my own in knowing that I need to change a few things. I'm always conscious.
What are you doing differently, TC?
Oh, well, my wife and I have recently moved to Colorado from Austin, Texas, and just, you know, paying more attention to what I'm doing with my time. And, you know, I think it's a holistic approach. It's just, you know, I want a healthy lifestyle and, you know, spending more time outside, spending more time with my wife and our dog. And at the same time, I have been back on the bike, actually, a little bit more, which is pretty great for me.
Mm-hmm. What about that pain? You have to handle a lot of pain as a world-class cyclist, Jacques?
Yes, you need to be able to handle. I mean, you can't go in any cycling event without having some sort of pain. It's just impossible. And you're driven to do more because it does actually feel good afterwards. And it's, you know, it releases endorphins. So you're like kind of drugged into, you know, going into your pain thresholds. But answering the person that you just came on, yes, there's a lot of bikes destroyed, and that's sad.
Mm-hmm.
And definitely the bike is a tool of so many different values. I mean, whether it's transportation, health, you know, getting to the market, you know, all sorts of things. And in Africa, it is definitely probably the number one tool that people use over there.
Hmm. Well, there has to be a way. That's one of the great problems in the world, isn't it? The haves and the those who do not have, and to be in a place where we're destroying those that things that other people need is, we got to figure that out somehow, right?
We definitely should figure that out.
Thank you, Dick, very much for your call. Shelley in Madison, hi.
Hi, great show. Thank you. First of all, on the pain point, we have a relative who rides every year on the Hotter Than Hell 100 down in Texas, 100-mile race in August. And secondly, a very close connection to bike and bike racing. My nephew's father was a very well-known international cyclist, Sergio Della Torre, who had a very untimely death in an international race. And then my last point is I'm involved with the World Engagement Institute as a volunteer at WE, and I am I myself am always surprised at how little I know and how little other people know about the culture and the lifestyle of the people in places like Rwanda. We work primarily in places like Somalia, Sri Lanka, Kenya. I don't know how much work we've done in Rwanda, but I'm just so amazed at how naive we are, how blind we are, and how we make so many assumptions about people's lives and culture without knowing personally what their lives are really like. So thank you very much. I can hardly wait to see this film.
Thank you, Shelley. Thanks for the call. TC, take that one on. What did you learn going to Rwanda doing this film?
Can you repeat the question?
Well, it was kind of lengthy, but how little we know about other cultures, other ways of life. So as a filmmaker, what did you learn? You learned a lot, I'm sure.
Yeah, no, I think that we culturally so often in the third world front or what we hear on the news and things like that, and you've got to spend time there. Is it, you know, any time that we do a film, as I do an immense amount of research on the front end to just get a picture of what I don't know. But usually that's just the tip of, you know, that's just the tip of the iceberg, is that there's so much more happening in a culture that we don't understand. And, you know, walking through this film, I got to see a lot of that. And that not everything's perfect, but in Rwanda's case, you know, there was a whole lot going on that was right. And they had been painted into they had been branded in a sense, you know, in a place that they were still a country that was in genocide. And the reality was, is that they were the fastest growing country in Africa. It's one of the safest countries in Africa. It's got one of the fastest growing economies in Africa. You see a lot of people who had gone through hell and back and were optimistically rebuilding their life. Mm-hmm. And they were learning to forgive. You know, that's a process. And watching people that were in each one of those categories, you know, I had my assumptions. I'll never forget when the plane landed in Rwanda for the first time. I had this pit in my stomach because I didn't know what I was going to see. And it took, you know, it takes some time to figure out, you know, what's real and what's just assumption. At the same time, you know, then there was times where I found things that were dark and not, you know, not positive in what I wanted to see. But overall, they were in such they were moving forward in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the big lesson learned out of it is never assume, because you only know until you've experienced something and lived there.
Mm-hmm.
It's very hard to understand. And I would challenge people to really dive into those cultures and to learn more and to, you know, maybe the beach vacation could be a little different this year. You know, maybe instead of Disneyland, maybe it could be going to Rwanda and helping out at a school or the cycling team or something, that just to get a cultural perspective. Because a lot of the times it's, you know, we see kids with flies on their face and all these things, and those aren't the films we make, because we've learned over time that there's also a larger, deeper story of hope that is often happening in these areas.
Mm-hmm. And what happened to you, Jock, as you dug in? There's quite a difference if you're living in a place rather than just visiting it for a week or so. What happened to you the more you dug in?
Living there, yeah, obviously it's incredibly different, and just being with the families and the writers. And I think one of the things that really saved me from getting discouraged, or, you know, we all have our agendas and we all have our time frame we think we can get things done in. And from the very beginning, I said, you know, I don't know this culture. I don't know who I can impact. But if I can change one person's life, it will be worth it to me, no matter how long I'm here. And too often, we think we can change a country. We can change so much. And when the little things that we change, we don't see that if you do change one life, you will change a family, a community, 1,000 people, and perhaps even a nation, which has changed in this case. And I think it's very sobering when you go in there and you just start living with them and trying to understand where you can plug into where it is most important in their lives, not going on what we think they need, because we might think they need clean water, but in fact, all they need is water. I mean, forget the cleanness. Mm-hmm. I mean, river water that's actually flowing out of a faucet is so rare there, it's ridiculous. Mm. And, you know, it might cost a tenth of the cost of getting an actual, you know, clean well to a village. It's, and, you know, electricity and education. I saw the impact of education, how important education is. And I never really realized that until I lived, you know, full time in Rwanda, how important education is and how we in America have no idea how good we have it. I mean, the fact that we can go to school and have decent, very good teachers and learn things is something that most of the world does not have.
Right. More phone calls in a moment. And we have yet to talk about Adrian. Jock mentioned him, but we have to tell his story. Just seeing his face is worth the price of admission. It's a remarkable story and quite a spirit who partially, along with others, but he's a big star in this film. All right, and more phone calls. We're talking this hour about one of the films that we thought you'd want to hear about. It's just part of, there are many in the Milwaukee Film Festival. This one is Rising from Ashes, and it's the story of the cycling team from Rwanda, Africa. The documentary filmmakers had no idea what was going to happen 7 years ago. Jock Boyer went over there. He was a really top-notch cyclist, the first American to ever ride in the Tour de France. He's won all kinds of cycling competitions in the United States. So he went over and developed these athletes who had their families destroyed during the genocide. They had nothing. They didn't have bikes. They barely had food. And they built a team that is good, really good. So we're talking about that. 800-486-8655. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tell us about Adrian before we go back to phone calls, Jock. He's such a presence in the film and must be a big presence in your life as well.
Adrian is one of the most remarkable young men I've ever met and been in touch with. It's been an honor to be, you know, by his side these last 6 years. He was impressive from, you know, the very, very first encounter I had with him in 2006. And he currently, you know, he became the first Rwandan to ride the mountain bike Olympics. And he has endured so much in his life, even after the genocide, where he lost 6 of his brothers and 60 of his family members. While I was with him, he was mentoring a young kid, a junior, you know, 16-year-old, and had a tragic accident while he was on a bike. He got run over by a car, and Adrian is right there and saw him being killed. And a couple months earlier, his dad died, and his dad was young. And I didn't find out till this year that his dad died of type 1 diabetes coma. And it's something that would have completely been avoidable. And one of the American teams that come to Rwanda, the Tour of Rwanda every year, is the Sanofit team, which is primarily riders with type 1 diabetes. And they give tests, and they give clinics prior to and after the Tour of Rwanda. And last year alone, they saved over 700 lives just coming to the race. And it just crushes me that Adrian, you know, lost his dad really in just this way that could have been avoided. And those are things that happen in Africa that are so tragic.
Right.
And, you know, Adrian just endures so much. And, you know, this having him see him in success that he is in. And, you know, we're hoping in the next couple of years with his current team, the MTN Quebec team, he can ride the Tour de France. And that would just be an epic moment.
Oh, wouldn't that be something? And I hope you
So that's what we're working on. And, you know, that's something, you know, Adrian will be with me my entire life. So it's just a joy to be around him and to be a part of his life and to watch him succeed and go forward in his life.
And I hope your cameras, TC, will be there at the Tour de France. What do you say?
That's been in talks recently, that's for sure.
I imagine. Let's go to Vicki in Mount Horeb next. Hi, Vicki.
Hello. I'm calling because we spent 3 weeks in Africa visiting our daughter, who is, she's a researcher, she studies the mountain gorillas of Rwanda.
Oh.
And when we were going to go over there, she's been there probably a total of about 3 years, sort of off and on. But when we were going over, I felt all that anxiety that you had talked about. I mean, I was afraid to go. I was excited to go. I was worried about going. I thought, what am I getting into? I could stay here in my nice, you know, American lifestyle and travel somewhere else. But it was the most amazing trip that I'll ever take, I'm sure. We just had an awesome time, and I know that word is highly overused, but I can't think of a better word to describe it. There are just so many people over there that are so inspirational, and, you know, obviously you found for this film some of the greatest, but there was a young, I was shopping, and I also never felt safer than I've ever felt when I was over there, no matter what time of day, and I went on my own, and I got lost. And these two women were trying to help me, but our language barrier was creating some difficulties. And the schools had just let out. And this young man, he was about 15, came up and said, "Can I help you?" And I said, "Yes, please." And I explained to him where I was trying to go. And he said, "Oh, I'm going that way. I'll walk with you." And he was so proud. He had just received his report card, or what we would call a report card. And he had scored very, very well. And I made the mistake of saying, "Oh, your parents are going to be so proud of you." And he said, just so matter-of-factly, "Oh, I don't have any parents. My parents are gone. I live in the rooming house down the street." And my heart just sank.
Right.
So there were so many stories. I can't tell it without crying.
Thank you, Vicki.
The other thing.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Is there any way to bring this film to Madison, the times that it's being shown in Milwaukee, just don't work.
Okay, yeah. It's the Milwaukee Film Festival now, but will it be shown in other places, TC?
Sure. If you if you go on our website, risingfromashesthemovie.com, and just send us an email, and it's very simple. You can book a screening in your city. We've got the film is playing around the country right now, and if you, it's as simple as that, or you can go to your local theater and request that it have a screening. And it's people like you that bring the film, that are the reason for the film's success, is that people have seen it, have been inspired, and have said, "I need to show this in my community." And this tidal wave is kind of forming that we had never expected. We were hoping, but it's kind of growing bigger than we had ever imagined.
That's wonderful.
All right, Vicki, bring it to Madison.
Just to add to that, my cousins from Gloucester, Massachusetts, just booked a screening in Gloucester, Massachusetts, because they saw it in a different area and said this has to come to Gloucester. So I know it can be done.
It's just part of the whole process of the way the film started and everything. Everybody is donating, right? Or it's word of mouth. It's, hey, come to Rwanda and build a cycling team. Why don't you make a film about it? You're successful. It's just all, I hate to think this is the way things are, but in a way, it's the way things were meant to be, and it's good.
The film, there's been it was a subtle, we built the film and we put it out. It opened at the Hamptons Film Festival last year, and we've played about 24 film festivals, and we've won over 16 awards. And that's when we really started to notice that people were excited about the film.
Right.
We've gotten incredible reviews from all the top publications in the country. And
yeah.
And that's when it became kind of humbling, is that people were really adopting the film of their own and saying, we want to bring it to our community. I need my friends to see this film.
Yeah, thank you both so much for being with us. It was really a lovely hour. T.C. Johnstone with us. We thank him and Jock Boyer for being with us. The film is Rising from Ashes. If you're in the Milwaukee area, it screens Friday at noon at the Oriental and Wednesday, October 9 at Fox Bay. And on our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, more information on, about how you can get it to your community. Thanks for listening. Thanks to K.P. Whaley and Rhonda Fanning, who produced this show.